This is Sten from the My Thought Coach podcast, where you'll find stories and other great stuff all designed to elevate your thinking and set you free in your mind. At the end of every episode is a guided meditation or tool written to go in tandem with the topic of the podcast. Everything on this podcast has, in one way or another, set me or someone close to me free. I'm glad you're here. So today's episode springs from a question that came in from one of my listeners. It's about anxiety, and it stood out to me and broke my heart because I know that she's not alone in having these kinds of feelings. I'll call her Tanya, which is not her real name, but here's what she says. I'll read you parts of it. I was wondering how you address anxiety about death. I have terrible panic attacks, and mostly because I'm worried about my health, or that the bus I see will hit me, or blow up, or something else awful. So I freeze, and I freak, not fight or flight. I do breathing exercises, meditate, take CBD, go to therapy, play music, and a ton of other things, but it's a constant, all-the-time anxiety, as soon as I wake up and until I go to bed. It's been crippling for the past few months. It kind of hit out of nowhere, and now the things I had been doing to manage it aren't working. Weirdly, the one thing that does work is crying. Anyway, would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks, Tanya. Tanya and anyone else out there that can relate, I feel you and I ache for you. What a burden to live with day in and day out. First off, the freeze response is one of the most common reactions to extreme stress. I'm glad to hear that you're crying also, because crying indicates that you're feeling things under the anxiety, which is very good. Anxiety is a response that comes when we want to avoid feeling things oftentimes. And those tears tell me that there are a lot of feelings in there. And I wonder if you were to allow yourself to just continue crying and stay in that discomfort for a little while, you can handle discomfort and sadness, what memories or thoughts might be in there. I find for me that the emotion that I'm in the middle of is often the best path for me to follow, and usually helps me understand some of the underlying thoughts or memories that are triggering those intense bouts of fear. If the sadness or the feelings are far too heavy to face, don't do it alone. Go see a trained professional that can help you process some of this. But anxiety is where many of us get stuck. So today I'm going to explore three different approaches to handling it, but they kind of mingle in and out of one another. My professional training started with research in sports psychology, but I specifically turned to the study of anxiety and biofeedback techniques 16 years ago when my son began to experience extreme anxiety at a very young age. A panic attack is terrifying to experience, and it's terrifying to watch in someone you love. But without question, the underlying antidote to fear is always calm. So I knew that I would need to learn how to help relax my son before even trying anything else. It's a lot like triage for the emotional state. Nothing will really happen until a semblance of calm can be experienced first. And that's why I focus so much on making recordings with a specific goal of helping listeners find the calm. And I'll put one of those recordings at the end of today's podcast. But remember this, if nothing else, if you are someone that experiences panic, the first thing that changes as we start to feel anxious is always our breathing. It's been found, for example, that breathing can start to alter up to 47 minutes before the onset of a panic attack. So I just want to go over how it alters. It used to be thought that shallow breathing is what led to panic, but more recent findings indicate that deep breathing, especially deeply breathing as you inhale, can also really disrupt the carbon dioxide balance in the bloodstream, and that is often what causes the dizziness, the tingling, the sense of unreality, and any physical distortions associated with the stress response. People who feel stressed often breathe in deeply but exhale rapidly. And that is exactly what you want to be doing if you need more energy, or if you need to get away from a lion or from a bus. But it is the opposite of what to do during stress. So instead, try this. Breathe in to the quick inward count of 7 and out to the count of 11. Now, the exact numbers don't really matter. It could be in the count of 5 and out to the count of 7. The point is that when the exhalation is longer than the breathing in or the inhalation, the body relaxes and then the mind follows. So you could do this, Tanya or any other listener, as a focus exercise if you notice that your thoughts are getting to that anxious place. You could try this during or before a social situation to see if it would help, or any other thing that triggers that anxiety for you. However, if the situation is really serious, we all know that something more probably needs to happen than just breathing. Although the breathing, don't underestimate it, because until your body gets relaxed, it's hard to do anything. But if in combination with the breathing, there are a few techniques that you could try as well. So listen to this research. It's found that socially anxious, shy children tend to recall less about their surroundings, including details about other people. See if this might match you. But that they're inwardly focused instead of outwardly focused. They tend to focus on their own imaginative representation of what they feel is happening or what might happen, or the anxiety about what might happen, than what is actually really going on. And it's not just children who do this. It's also been found that adults who suffer public speaking anxiety tend to overfocus on themselves at the expense of focusing their attention outwardly. So from this research, a lot of therapists start to kind of help their clients understand that if they consciously focus on their environment rather than themselves, even in stirring up memories, that it really helps tremendously with anxiety and also in healing past traumas that might trigger anxiety. So, for example, if someone has overwhelmingly sad feelings about a memory, I might ask them to just widen that context at that time and have them describe what people were wearing during that sad situation, or what the decorations were like, or any other details. And this is a really great way of helping yourself kind of put your feelings around a memory into a place where you can view it differently and it becomes less intense. And when you can do that, then you have more objectivity and you can look at it a little bit differently and move on, and especially have that memory without having huge emotional triggers every time that you do. So I had someone that I was working with that had severe social anxiety, and she had a work social thing coming up. And so we worked on just practicing that 7-11 breathing of breathing in for 7 and exhaling for 11. Again, it doesn't have to be exactly that, but it needs to be a shorter inhale and a longer exhale. And that immediately will put your body and your brain in a place of calm where that amygdala can function, and then you can begin to make better decisions. So, but after that breathing, I had her go to the party knowing that she was going to try to remember as many details about the party that she could and bring those details back to me. So to be very, very aware in the middle of it, what color the walls were, what the artwork was around, or the trees or plants, or what color people were wearing, or intricate details of the jewelry of someone that she might be talking to that where she felt nervous, or anything about people that she hadn't noticed before, to become very aware of those things, to help her manage the anxiety in the middle of it. This kind of awareness can also be turned internally as well. Just saying to yourself, oh, that's interesting, without any judgment at all, that's interesting. My heart's beating a little bit faster and I'm feeling tension. It's so important to not have judgment as you become aware of maybe what your anxious response is, but instead, just like you're a reporter and you're just recording down the physical sensations, you're paying attention to the micro details of, oh, that's interesting. How strange that my left arm feels tense. It a lot of times it helps to maybe put that focus outward to manage the anxiety, but it's always, you always have the option of putting it inward as well. And both of those techniques will help tremendously in starting to manage future panic attacks or even anxiety moments while you're in the middle of them. So breathing and then being hyper aware of the details that surround an anxious event. Or if you keep having a memory about an anxious event, keep going back and going, hey, can I remember the details of the car that was outside? Or any little details that you can draw up, even in your memory of an anxiety-promoting memory, would be tremendous if that memory and thinking about it keeps causing you anxiety. Go back to that memory next time and look for little details. I want to reroute and go back to the beginning, to the question that was asked, and discuss another therapeutic approach that you might want to consider, Tanya and anyone else that is really fighting such intense anxiety and preoccupation about, it's almost to the level of a phobia. So when people experience anxiety due to a fear, in this case, a phobia or traumatic memory, they often avoid anything that reminds them of it. And this avoidance does provide temporary relief, but ultimately, it maintains the fear and pattern of avoidance, which can really inhibit your life pretty dramatically. Because let's be honest, in a lot of cases, the avoidance can actually make things worse and give more power to the fear. Exposure therapy is designed to reduce those feelings, especially irrational feelings, by safely exposing yourself to various aspects of that fear. So for example, while working with someone who has a fear of spiders, arachnophobia, an exposure therapist might first ask a person to picture a spider in his or her mind. And this might lead to even several sessions in which a therapist would ask that person to imagine gradually more intense scenes with the spider, maybe the spider on a web or catching a fly or whatever it is, just gradually increasing intensity. But it would be teaching coping skills and providing support all the way through. So once the anxiety around just thinking of a spider or being able to draw a spider, once that anxiety is reduced, then a therapist might progress to even real life exposures. But in this type of exposure, a therapist might start by placing a spider in a jar at the far end of the room and then lead up to placing the spider in the person's hand. So if this sounds like something, particularly in the case of being very fearful of death in particular, you might want to ask your therapist to look into this and see if it feels like a fit is exposure therapy. And there are a couple of modalities to explore. And that would be a safe place to maybe go into exploring that kind of exposure therapy. And in your case, it would be probably exploring the fear of death. And that's a pretty loaded and heavy question. And I would definitely push you to see a therapist. But there are a lot of things that we can do outside of therapy, because even if you are seeing a therapist once or twice a month or four times every week, even, it won't help you so much with the thoughts that you have during the day. And so the best tool and technique you can have is to become your own thought coach. And that's what I want to cover here at the end. there's this thought coach inside of me, the non-cognitive analytical psychologist part of me. But here are my thoughts for the rest of us, for just the daily anxieties that are inevitable in all of our lives as we go through experiences and have connections to things that hook us into all sorts of old trauma and fears. There are circumstances in the world that we cannot control. And everything that happens outside of us is a circumstance. So we can't control other people. They're outside of us. We can't control what they do. We can't control what they say. And we can't control what they think. We can't control the past because that's already done. So we have no power over it. We can't control anything that has happened out there in the world. And those are all of our circumstances. Those are things that happen in the world. Those really are the only things that we can't control in our lives, are our circumstances. But what we can control are our thoughts, our feelings, and our actions. All of those things are within our control. We forget that a lot, I think. We think that everything is either in our control or nothing is in our control. Circumstances are not in our control, but everything else is. It's easy to forget that this is a truth, because if you even turn on any kind of TV or even ads in particular, kind of sell this idea that if you buy a certain car, or if you reach a certain size, or if you have a certain outfit, or if your home looks just like this, or if your kids are that amazing and overachieving, that somehow that will make you happier or feel more fulfilled or bring joy or feeling of success. The truth is, what's going on inside of your mind is what will determine how you feel and how you act. So easy to get brainwashed by this idea of believing that we have to chase something outside of us in order to change the way that we feel. So here's what you can control: your thoughts. Your thoughts are what create your feelings. And those feelings drive your actions. And your actions create the life that you have right now. It's really important to be compassionate and understanding towards yourself so that you can begin to change your thinking. You can't fight yourself into change or beat yourself into change. It won't be permanent. It won't last. If you're trying to lose weight or you're trying to get something in your life or create something, you cannot do it by forcing yourself or using willpower, just gritting your teeth. You basically set yourself up to be fighting against yourself or trying to defeat your own mind with your mind. It won't ever work. The only way to begin to start to change our thoughts so that we can change the way that we feel, so that we can change the way that we act, and it's really that simple, is by just first accepting where we are and feeling lots of compassion. So consider this. What if the thought that you are thinking now and that you may have been thinking since you were a child and that one of your parents or someone in your life told you about yourself, that thought is what is causing you pain? You don't have to really understand exactly why you're thinking it as an adult. You just have to recognize that you are thinking it. And then just be kind to yourself in that recognition. So if you recognize that you're having thoughts that are negative, and most of us are. Most people walking around the world are having very negative thoughts, thinking that that is what will finally motivate them, berating themselves constantly, finding fault with themselves, pushing themselves with very critical thoughts and self-talk, a lot of it without even being aware that they're doing it. But remember, what's going on inside of your mind is what is determining how you feel and how you act. And everything that you're avoiding in your life is because you are afraid of how it will make you feel. So think about it. Is there any emotion that you can't handle? Usually emotions, there are these feelings that we just avoid. And so we'll create circumstances to just avoid feeling rejected or avoid feeling lonely or avoid feeling shame. But the reality is, and if you've looked at some of my recordings about dealing with urges, feelings are a lot like urges. They come and they intensify. And then if you can stay with that feeling, it will subside. It will always pass. The only way that it will continue and continue to grow is when you are trying to avoid it. So just ask yourself right now, could I handle feeling some rejection? Or could I handle feeling ashamed? Could I handle feeling regret deeply for things that I've done and apologetic? You can. Let me tell you, you can handle hard feelings. If you stay with them, they will eventually, and it won't take long, they will fade and they will change. And you will begin to learn that you can endure discomfort, because you are creating so much discomfort for yourself by trying to avoid the feeling that you're so busy trying to avoid. And I'm sure that just being willing to feel whatever is in front of you is less painful than the crazy that you may have created by trying to avoid it. All the things that you're avoiding in your life right now is because you're afraid of how they will make you feel if you stop avoiding them. So if you are willing to just be willing to feel any emotion, and then you can get really good at just feeling those emotions and sticking with them, then you are free in that moment. If you're willing to feel any emotion that comes, you're free to go into any situation with very little fear, because there's no feeling that you're not willing to feel. And you also go knowing how to create positive feelings and positive emotion whenever you want, because you can change your thoughts. It sounds complicated, but it's really quite simple. And I want you to just sit with that for a minute and think about your own life and what this could mean for you. Could you be willing to feel any emotion, knowing that once you get really good at feeling your emotions, that's really not that hard, and having strategies to get through those strong emotions? You absolutely could. Then you could go into any situation with very little fear. You could do all kinds of crazy stuff in your life. You could make a hard apology to someone and improve relationships in your life. You could stop eating food that's not good for you because you're not afraid of feeling a craving or a wanting of sugar as you try to get off it. You're not afraid of getting up early and exercising because you know that if you get up, whatever happens, you can get through it. When I was going through my divorce, I was just obsessed with trying to find a therapist for my now ex-husband and seeing if we could find someone that could heal him and make him stop doing a certain behavior that was causing me and him and our family a lot of pain. And I called so many therapists, and I finally found this woman who specialized in that particular treatment. And as I described the situation to her, she said, "He's not the one with the problem. You're the one with the problem." And I all of a sudden realized that I was absolutely the one with the problem. He was sleeping great, and I wasn't sleeping at all. He seemed to be functioning well. I could not stop thinking about things he had done to hurt me. I couldn't stop. And so she had me come in, and as we started to kind of explore, and that was the first time that I had ever gone to therapy in my life, and it was just fantastic. I mean, it was horrible, but it was fantastic. So there was this theme that started to show up, and as I had someone to kind of talk to about it, I realized that every time I started thinking about some of this behavior that was difficult for me, that he had done, that inside of me, I started to feel an enormous amount of anxiety and dread. And instead of feeling, I didn't even think about it. I just knew that it was a very uncomfortable situation. And so what I did in response to that is I would go and run. I would ask my neighbor to watch the kids, and I would put on my shoes, and I would run, and I would run, and run, and way too far, until I could hardly walk, and then I would be so exhausted that I just would, the feeling would pass. And I thought that I had found the magical key to getting through this difficulty is just running. But she challenged me to something really interesting that was ended up being exactly what I needed. She said, the next time you start to feel that panic and that anxiety, I want you to stay with a feeling, and everything inside of you is going to want to get up and get out of there and do what you've always done and go for a run or go work out. And I don't want you to do that. Next time, I want you to just go down, sit in a chair in your house. There was this big puffy chair in our family room. Sit in it and stay with that feeling. Just stay with it and see what happens. And yeah, within 2 days, it started to come up again. And I started to feel the feelings. My whole body was just seized up with this feeling of dread and anxiety. And the more I thought about it, the more upset and the more I literally felt like I was going to die. I curled up in a ball and I felt it was a horrible feeling. And I couldn't even, there were just no thoughts. It was just this horrible feeling of I am going to die. This is too much for me. And do you know what's crazy? Is as I stuck with that feeling, I began to have some really clear memories that I had not thought about since I was about 3 or 4 years old. Weird memories and things that I didn't consciously remember at all. And situations that I had been in that were being kind of wakened up, I guess, by the behavior of my then husband. And I don't know. I mean, that's how we resolved that after when I talked about it. But I had memories that I had never, ever gone back to, ever. And some challenges and some difficulties that had happened to me when I was a young child. And they were painful, really sad, hard memories. And so right underneath that anxiety were these memories that I had been holding on to that were being kind of brought up, I think, by a lot of things, by my kids being the age that I had been when those things had happened to me, by, I don't know, they were just there. And then the crazy thing is that I was able to then go back to my therapist and share with her some of these memories that I had with the eyes of a grown-up and begin to see how many areas of my life had been kind of messed up by beliefs that I had picked up when I was 3 and 4 years old that had made a huge impact on the decisions that I was making in my life up until that point. But oh, what a difference remembering those things has made for me since then, because then I could start to work on myself and recognize that I was just as damaged and just as grieving in my own way as my husband was. I just had been dealing with it in other ways that weren't as destructive to a marriage, maybe, but they were equally destructive to me. And they had me making all kinds of choices to avoid just remembering those things and to avoid the feelings. But I will tell you, I don't know if I've ever felt anything worse than that, ever. Since then, it was a horrible, scary, dark 10 minutes but it was 10 minutes. I had spent years before that time in all sorts of antics to try to avoid those 10 minutes. And none of those things were really serving me nearly as much as just walking through those 10 minutes. This is a long way around to really put out that stress to you the importance of being willing to feel stuff. Okay, here's how you can feel emotions that you want to feel. Think about that emotion that you want. So if that emotion is happiness, and then try to really identify what happiness feels like in your body. So you can think about something that would make you happy. Your thoughts can help you start to initiate those feelings of happiness and begin to really understand and think about why you want to feel happy. And then you can go back to that truth that all emotions are created by thoughts and create the thoughts that will generate happiness. So think about your life right now and think about the types of feelings, the main feelings, maybe two or three, that you have on a regular basis, the top most common feelings. Again, no judgment. They probably are negative, and that is completely fine. Just look at them. What are those feelings, and identify those. And once you have, explore what main thoughts that you're having that are creating those feelings. The thoughts, the memories, the stories, the projecting into the future. What are the thoughts that are happening for you that are creating those feelings? Because you are the one that creates your feelings. And the top thoughts that you're having regularly, those are creating your feelings. When you start to see these connections, you could then pay attention and ask yourself, what are the kinds of feelings that I want to be having on a more regular basis? If I could choose any thoughts in the world and a fairy were to come down and say, what are the feelings that you want to feel the most in your life? Just for fun, what would those be? The top one or two or three feelings that you would like. And then once you know those, you can choose thoughts that would better help facilitate those feelings. So identify what thoughts those would be. We've gone through a lot in this episode, so let me just review, and you can come back and listen to this, because it was just, I didn't end up where I thought I'd end up, but we covered a lot of territory, and I promise I'll get better at sticking to an outline. But again, we talked about in this episode how to deal with feelings of panic and how to breathe. And we talked about the letter that Tanya sent in and her extreme anxiety about death and about potential causes for her death and how just nothing can really happen unless you get to calm. And so your first job is to get to calm. Again, using your thoughts to get. You can use my thought coach stuff to help you retrain your thoughts to get to calm. I have all kinds of stuff over at my meditation station or on my website, My Thought Coach, that can help you get to calm. But a quick and easy way, if you're really starting to feel the anxiety, is to think about breathing in for 7 and then exhaling longer. So exhaling for 11. Make sure that your inhale is shorter than your exhale, not the other way around. And the other way around is what you're going to want to do if you're feeling panic. Don't do it. Breathe in short, breathe out long. Then the next thing that you could do is pay more attention to your surroundings. If you're in an anxious situation, look over there. Hey, there's a tree. Notice those leaves. Look at that bird. Notice that all of the scenery going on around that anxious situation. I then introduced exposure therapy, which I thought might be a really good option for Tanya. Is going to a trained therapist and learning about this technique and in a controlled environment, maybe seeing if some of that might help bring kind of a normalcy towards some of those thoughts so they don't have such an extreme effect on your anxiety level. And then the last was ending with true thought coach stuff. It's the real core of anything else, is that simple recognition that the thoughts that you're having will affect the feelings that you're having, and the feelings that you're having are affecting what you're doing in your life and the success or the failure that you're experiencing. And how simple. I mean, it may be depressing, but in a way, just knowing that you created the mess that you're living in that thought is also the recognition that of the tremendous power. Because if you created the mess, your thoughts could lead to actions that could lead to getting you right out of that mess and becoming a way better person than you had been if you hadn't been to the mess first. The truth around all of this is that most situations just don't change. But we do, and we absolutely can. Coming up is a guided meditation. It's just a simple, good, efficient tool to help specifically with anxiety. It's a breathing exercise for anxiety. I'm so glad that you're here and that you're listening. And if you have a question for me, send it in. I love getting emails. If it's a good question that we can answer on our show, I will tackle it. Until next time, thanks for listening. Shallow and irregular breathing results in an insufficient oxygen supply, the accumulation of bodily wastes and poisons, and inadequate functioning of all body organs. Breathing that is slow, smooth, and deep leads to a clear and alert mind. Close your eyes and focus your mind on your breath. Just follow the air as it goes in and as it goes out. Feel as it comes in and as it goes out. If your mind begins to wander, just bring it back to your breath. Feel your stomach rise, your ribs expand, and your collarbone rise. Breathe in naturally and slowly. On your next exhalation, release all the air from your lungs without straining. Let it all go. Let it all out. And prepare your lungs to receive fresh oxygen. Now take in a full deep breath and let this air go to the very bottom of your lungs. Feel your stomach rise, your chest expand, and the collarbone area fill. Now empty your lungs from top to bottom. Let all the air out. Compress your stomach to squeeze all the stale air and carbon dioxide. Squeeze out every bit of air. Let it all go. Take in another deep breath. And as you breathe in, your diaphragm expands and massages all the internal organs in the abdominal area, aiding your digestion. Breathe out and relax. Feel the knots in your stomach untie. Let go. Breathe in. Your diaphragm is stimulating your vagus nerve, slowing down the beating of your heart, relaxing you. Breathe out. Let it all go. Relax. Relax. More and more. Breathing heals you, calms you, soothes you. Breathe in again, fully and completely. Oxygen is entering your bloodstream, nourishing all your organs and cells, protecting you. Breathe out, release all the poisons and toxins with your breath. Your breath is cleansing you, healing you. Breathe in. Now imagine exhaling confusion and inhaling clarity. Imagine exhaling darkness and inhaling light. Imagine exhaling hatred and inhaling love. Exhaling anxiety and inhaling peace. Exhaling selfishness and inhaling generosity. Exhaling guilt and inhaling forgiveness. Exhaling weakness and inhaling courage. Breathe in through your nose and sigh out through your mouth. Let the air stay out of your lungs as long as it is comfortable, and then take in another breath. Let your breath return to its normal and natural pace. Continue to breathe in slowly, smoothly, and deeply. Your breathing is steady, easy, and silent. Each time you exhale, allow yourself to feel peaceful and calm and completely relaxed. If your mind wanders, bring your attention back to your breath. Whenever you're ready, stretch and open your eyes, feeling refreshed, rejuvenated, alert, and fully alive.